Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Today We Learn. My name is Razzle. As always, this is a really, really fun episode. This is one of those episodes where at the end we have another like a fun treat that is a surprise and just fun for everybody. This is a really great guest, really awesome, well-rounded guest. He's been around the globe. He's got a lot of great stories, and we get some great fun facts in there too. He's got a show on Viceland, the television network Viceland, out right now called The Vice World of Sports, and they're really cool, like mini docs tackling sports in different regions and countries and states and all of that. And they're really well done and really well executed if you like sport type documentary shows and all that. And this guy's just a really cool, nice guy. So you should definitely check those out. Filling in for Dan once again is guest host David Sullivan. You've heard him before here. He's done a couple two in the past. And it's a great show. So we'll just get into it. And once again, thanks for downloading and listening to this. So today we learned number 136 with Sal Masekela.
Gentlemen, let's broaden our minds.
Yeah, we can shut that
off. Nice to meet you.
So you go by Sal, right?
Yeah.
How do you pronounce your first name?
Salema.
How do you pronounce your last name?
Masekela.
Okay. Yeah. That's easier than I was saying.
It's easier than it sounded in your head.
Yeah.
Right?
That's
usually what happens.
That's why I go by Razzle instead of Eric Gwizdala.
That's so cool.
Ah.
Gwizdala.
You say that, not growing up with it.
Listen, my full name, and we're probably wasting it right now.
Oh, but no, we're recording.
Oh, cool. My full name is Salema Mabena Masekela.
Ah, there it is. Yep.
So imagine what that was like.
Yeah, Mabena Masekela. See, Masekela is awesome.
It is. Gwizdala is also gangster.
It is. But what did they call you growing up in high school or in grade school?
They called me Salami.
Ooh.
Saliva. Salamander.
Ooh, okay.
Italian kids called me
Salminio. So it was all your first names.
Salminio. Yeah.
Okay. See, I would get
Dilemma.
Oh.
Dilemma, who's always in a dilemma.
Were you a problem? Were you like into quandaries a lot?
I was the kid whose report card said a joy to have in class, a bit of a social butterfly, could tend to spend more time on his schoolwork.
Oh, okay. It's
translation, he doesn't shut up and he's a pain in the ass. Yeah. It's the nicest way I could put it.
And you didn't do your schoolwork?
I was liberal.
Okay.
I took liberal studies early.
I did
the stuff that I liked.
Yeah. Which was exactly same here. In grade school maybe more so, but in high school I definitely did what I liked, which was not homework. And I was fortunate enough to be enough of like a likable guy to where I could go into class earlier, maybe 5 minutes early, and get the answers from other people who actually did the work.
From people who were charitable with their work?
Hey, man, it's an interesting – this country has been built on people who – like smarter people who would let the – because it's like what's the saying? Like A students work for C students?
Yes, totally.
I don't have anybody working for me yet, but eventually – I think that'll come to be true, right?
That's really interesting way of looking at it. I think I got by with being the friendly, funny guy.
Yeah.
But then my senior year, it was like, hey, so we have some issues with your credits. And I had moved from the East Coast to California, to San Diego. And there was a couple classes they wouldn't take, and I didn't find that out until my summer break of my junior year. So I ended up having to take a zero period. And a seventh period. So I was there before everybody. After everybody, taking like general math.
See, that's in it. Like, I had a lot of friends who did the 0 hour. And I was like, y'all are crazy. Like, I'm not going to get up this early. But then I'd have to stay till like 3, and everybody's already leaving that did that. And it's like, now as an adult, I'm like, it's amazing how when you wake up early, how much more you can accomplish, and like how much of a day it is.
You kill it.
24 hours is so long to get things done.
If I'm up at 6:30.
Well, that's talking nonsense.
If I get up
I'm looking at like 8 o'clock here.
No, if I'm up at 6:30, 7, I will kill the day.
Yeah.
And by about 6 o'clock, I feel like I won some shit.
Right. And it's interesting when you have a to-do list and you knock it down and then you're like, oh, wait a minute. Now what do I do?
Yeah.
And that's what naps are for.
I'm making my bed.
Yeah.
As a thing to help jumpstart that, because I wasn't a bed maker for a long time. I thought, this is foolish. I'm getting back in here and I'm going to mess it up. But then when you date girls, they're like, hey, what's up with your bed not being made?
Well, that's very true. And I'm in that boat as well. And I concur completely. But if I know I'm not, right now I'm single, so I'm not like exactly Johnny Bravo, so I'm not like bringing ladies home every night to where it matters. So I'll just use my quilt. Like, I'll only make the quilt part. Like, that's why I have an over cover to cover up the messed up part of my bed.
I'm a Virgo. Yeah. And I have some weird little issues. So seeing the sheets all bunched up underneath the quilt gives me anxiety. So it's either all or nothing.
Well, let me tell you, that's what laundry is for.
Right.
You just don't fold your laundry and put it on top of your bed. And then you won't notice those bunches of covers.
I'm the same. I can't. I
and then when you go to sleep, you just put your laundry back in your
When I'm on a trip and I'm gone on this show sometimes 10, 12 days and don't get to do laundry. You'd think I just take all the dirty clothes and throw it into the bag.
Yeah.
But I have to fold them as if they were clean.
Oh, that's amazing. I wish I was that OCD.
I'm a strange human being.
Ladies and gentlemen, that voice you hear is Sal Masekela, host of Vice World of Sports on Viceland, formerly H2, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Welcome to the show. Thank you. Thank you for stopping by. I know I'm glad we finally got you on.
It's an honor, really. To be on this show, and I go back with the Nerdist dude back to my E days.
Oh yeah, I was reading about that. You've been hosting and doing things for a long time now.
Dancing and you've diving been all and over town, shimmying and shoobing. But yeah, when he was doing what was it, Attack of the Show?
Yeah, over there at the Miracle Mile there.
At the Miracle Mile there on Wilshire, I was doing a show called The Daily 10. But G4 and E were in the same building. So I hung out with him and Kevin Pereira. We shared, like, our dressing room areas were in the same area. And they were the only cool people, like, regular people in the building. Everyone else was, like, lived on Planet Celebrity. And I kind of was in this weird in-between place where I got the job because I was funny.
Okay.
But I wasn't really, like, an entertainment news guy. So those guys really kept me human and had lots of laughs, and it was really, really fun. And they'd bring me on their show to do skits and stuff. It was fun.
That's great. It's amazing how small of a world it is.
It
when
is.
It comes to just how small this town is,
right?
Let alone how small the world is in general. We like to start off each show with the guest, not to put you on the spot, providing a fun fact about yourself or something you learned recently. It can be a Snapple fact. It can be something you learned doing one of your shows, doing one of your episodes, or it could be something, you know, you're a Virgo. It could be something, you know, something like that, like a fun random fact.
I just learned I'm a Virgo.
I just learned I'm a Virgo. So if anything comes to mind.
Fun fact about myself that I recently learned. I was in South Africa visiting my dad a few weeks ago, and I wish I had a picture of it to show you, but people in the audience won't be able to see. But yeah, I got some interesting facts about my great-grandparents.
Oh, please do, because I got a couple facts about your dad here. So
my dad's pretty cool.
I mean, it's all just Wikipedia facts anyway. So
but my
it's
great,
not like it's secrets.
My great-grandfather was Scottish.
Okay.
I'm very black, audience.
Hey, don't believe him. He's whiter than me.
Yeah.
He's very white.
But my great-grandfather was Scottish, and he was a diamond smuggler / minor smuggler, but he had an affinity for South African women to the point where he had like 5 or 6 wives.
What?
Yeah, around the country as he was going around.
Oh, he's one of those guys
doing his diamonding.
Different lives in different places.
Yeah, those Scotsmans, and one of those 6 wives ended up being my grandmother. I mean, ended up being a daughter that they produced would be my grandmother.
So did you see any of that diamond fortune?
No.
Has anybody seen any of that diamond fortune?
No, we, like, all that Scottish whiteness was no longer applicable once apartheid came.
Well, your beard is very red, though.
Thank you.
Like, believe it or not, it's like redder than my chin.
It's my beard oil. But once apartheid came around, none of that Scottish blood counted. And my dad ended up leaving the country. He was a political exile. He had to flee South Africa.
Okay, now explain that to me, because A, I'm not very bright, and B, I have here that your dad is a South African jazz musician.
Mm-hmm.
So talk to me about so he left. Tell me about that. What is that? Political exile. Does that mean like, hey, you're talented, you can leave? Or was it like, no. Like he was sneaking out of there?
That meant like if you stay, his options was if I stay, they're either going to put me in jail or conveniently end my life.
What? Conveniently? Yeah. What does that mean? Like, you know, like a quick, like one of the arteries where you bleed out in 40 seconds, or like a slow death?
Like kill you in some manner and then publicly say that something else happened.
Oh, so like the government.
They used to, one of
like
the things,
conspiracies.
What they used to do to dissidents was say that they had jumped out of a building.
Ah.
That was one that they did.
That's such an easy one.
Yeah. He jumped out of a building or he fell in jail. But my dad was basically, you know, apartheid really started becoming a thing in the mid 40s, and in the late 50s, after they, you know, they literally had uprooted entire communities of black people and just moved them someplace else and made the land white. And my dad was over it, and he was a musician. He was a trumpet player, and he was playing underground shows with musicians of every color under the sun, and that was a huge infringement. And these guys were all brave because they're making music, and they're realizing obviously that this race thing is a non-existent piece of bullshit that's being used to control people.
Yeah,
and he just couldn't live with it anymore. I mean, you had to carry a passport to go from one neighborhood. Imagine if you wanted to go to West Hollywood.
I don't. I don't. That's a tough. I mean, I have a good imagination, but I don't. I don't.
Imagine you wanted to go to Silver Lake or
even that is like a hike. Parking is so bad. Like, I live in Culver City.
Imagine.
I live near Sony, and it's such a nice, quiet little area. And now they're building the train through there, and I'm like even getting over that.
You're fucked. Imagine if you wanted to take a field trip to Venice.
Okay.
You would need a passport. You need to get a visa, essentially, of when you could go.
What if I just really hated LA and I didn't want to go anywhere?
Then I guess you'd be fine.
I'd be fine.
Yeah. But if you wanted to, you know, if you wanted to leave someplace,
close to each other,
yeah, you'd have to have a passport and it'd be stamped. And if you got pulled over or walking, and a police officer walked up to you and said, "Show me your passport," and it wasn't up to date, they'd throw you in jail.
How often do you need to update them?
Every day.
Really?
Yeah. Every day, you needed permission as a black South African. You needed permission at all times to be wherever you were, other than your house.
That's so weird.
So weird.
That's so. What do you mean? Like the idea of regression,
right?
Like to go, because it wasn't like that prior to the 40s, right?
No, I mean it obviously the British and the Dutch and everyone else had gone down there and plundered as much as they could, but there was still some semblance of a agreed balance, even though they had taken advantage of South Africans. But then, you know, in around the mid 40s or so, they were like, "Hey, why don't we just make this thing legal? Subject these people and take it over."
That's so mind blowing.
Yeah,
it's so mind blowing. So your dad was a jazz musician.
Yeah, he still is.
He still is.
Yeah, he's crushing it. He sold out Disney Hall last year.
Get out of town.
76 years old. Played for Obama 2 weeks ago when the president had his jazz day. Where he decided, you know what, I'm going to bring in all of my favorite musicians over the course of history that play jazz, and I want Hugh Masekela to be one of them. And so my dad flew from South Africa, hung out with Obama for a couple of days, and then cruised out to L.A. My dad's kind of this.
How come?
Shit.
Why are you on the show? Why can't we have your dad on the show?
Yeah, right? I'm basically.
What kind of? I've been hornswoggled. I don't even know what that means, but I feel like.
Totally, totally hornswoggled. I got to go with my dad. Paul Simon did this incredible album called Graceland in the mid-80s.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
And
I listen to good music.
Yeah. So my dad made it possible for Paul Simon to make the Graceland album, got him into South Africa. And then Paul Simon said to my mom, because I didn't live with my dad at the time, and they were playing.
Yeah.
The tour had just begun, and we went to go see this tour, and hadn't seen my dad in a couple of years because he'd been living in West Africa. And long story short, Paul Simon, I hit it off with his son, Harper. I hit it off with Paul, and he says, "Hey, man, you'd be really cool. You know, I'm going to take my son, Harper, out on the road with us around the world on this tour, and I think it'd be really good for you if you came." And I was like, "My parents aren't going to let me go on tour with my dad, and they sure is not going to let me leave the country with you, Paul Simon." He's like, "No worries. I'll handle this." My mom comes backstage. Paul Simon walks up to my mom. My mom's freaking out. She's like, Simon Garfunkel, super fan. And Paul just says, I'd like to take Salema with us out on the road on this tour. I think it'd be good for him to bond with his father. And I watch my I watch him just like Jedi mind trick my mom into being like, that's a great idea. I'll convince his stepfather. You can take my son for 3 months. And so I was at 15. I was a roadie on a rock and roll tour with the, like one of the biggest tours in the world.
Graceland, for the listeners that don't know, it came out August 25th, 1986. And it had, let me look at this here. This is real quick also. This is David Sullivan. He's going to guest host with me because Dan couldn't make it today. You may recognize him from Netflix's Flaked. He's guest hosted before.
He ruined, you helped ruin Venice.
That's right.
He helped ruin Venice. Yeah. Oh, you recognize him. I never watched the show.
Yep.
I never watched the show. I'm looking, so listen to this. You just missed it. Awesome. He was a roadie for Paul Simon. His dad is an amazing jazz musician.
Whoa.
Who helped make Graceland, the album with Graceland, Diamonds on the Soles of Her Shoes. That is one of my favorite whistling parts of any song, though. I can't whistle, but you could probably whistle because you're.
Yeah.
But it's we're all trying to whistle here in the microphone.
Wow.
Then, like, he went on that tour and he was a roadie and he hung out with
Paul
Simon.
That's amazing.
At 15.
That's why you have such big arms.
Yeah.
You get development at such a young age.
Carrying around all those PVs.
That's right.
It was cool. It's the reason I didn't go to college.
You Can Call Me Al is on that album.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. Under African Skies, Homeless. It's arguably one of Paul Simon's best.
Boy in the
solo.
Bubble.
Boy in the Bubble.
Wow. I think it is probably that and the next album, Rhythm of the Saints, which was more of a Brazilian tilt.
Yeah.
Is the two of his greatest albums. But yeah, it was nuts, man.
And what did your dad do on that album?
My dad didn't play on the record
because
he couldn't go to South Africa to record. But Paul was so grateful for my dad for making it possible for him to go down there and work with these musicians that my dad had shared top billing. It was like Paul Simon, Hugh Masekela, Ladysmith Black Mambazo, wow, and Miriam Makeba. That was the way Paul presented it. He gave everyone top billing. So it was like a 4-hour show.
Wow. Yeah.
So Paul would come out, and then he'd introduce Mambazo, and then my dad, and then, you know, Miriam, and then everyone would do songs together. And by the end, everyone's on the stage, and people are like, people have gone to heaven and come back. It was a religious experience of a tour, and to be a kid, you know, on this tour, and it was wild.
Yeah.
And I was in charge of, I would go into the audience, funny story, I'd go into the audience and I'd be in like in the first five rows of the general area, and the musicians would point out women that they
get out of town.
Cool. Like this dude, Bagiti Kumalo, who was the bass player, he'd be
shout
playing
out to
bass.
Bagite?
Bagiti Kumalo.
Bagite?
Bagiti. Mm-hmm. Bagiti Kumalo.
Oh, what a womanizer, Bagiti.
He would point his bass, the neck of his bass, in that direction. And I'd be in the crowd, like, dancing, pretending. And I'd be like, this one. And he'd be like, move the bass head this way. And then, like, he'd do this thing where he'd move forward with the bass.
Oh,
and that's
gosh.
How it would be selected. And then I'd hand those women passes. I would try and find the ones that had daughters. And that was my job during during the shows.
I was
an excellent wrangler, and then I'd bring all the women and whoever's the other guests they had, I'd bring them into the general room and get everyone all acquainted, and then, you know.
That's cool.
Now, I've heard similar stories with like Poison and Guns N' Roses and stuff like that. What described to me the difference between Paul Simon groupies and, say, a Guns N' Roses groupie in 1986?
I'd probably say schooling. Degrees.
Education level.
But you'd be surprised, man. I mean, there was smoke shows everywhere we went.
Wow.
Like, just and also like incredible women, like with presence and strength, and they had no issues about the fact that they were back there to meet these dudes, and then whatever happened afterwards, it wasn't my problem.
Right.
But I definitely would aim for daughters.
Oh yeah.
And I also lied about my age on tour. I was 15 at the time, but I told everyone I was 19.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, of course.
It worked. So.
As you should.
It was a pretty groundbreaking time in my life.
Does your dad still? Where does your dad live nowadays?
My dad lives in Johannesburg.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you get back there to see him often?
I was just there 3 weeks ago.
Awesome.
Yeah, we were hanging out. We were roommates for a week, and we had a really good time.
What's the weather like down there?
Right now, it's winter.
Oh.
Which means it's like 60.
Oh, that's perfect. That's my kind of winter.
Yeah, it's really. It's a special place, man. It's such a cool energy in South Africa, and it's like kind of. It's turning the tide where it's starting to find its feet. They went through some really, really horrible times post-apartheid where it was like, okay, right. we're free. But shit, our infrastructure's fucked up and right. there's a lot of things that are bad and crime is bad and people don't have jobs. And, you know, I was there for the World Cup in 2010. I went as a human interest reporter for ESPN. And that was the most, like, incredible time I've ever seen.
Wow. You know,
the country was just, like, beaming. There was no issues. People were just so happy. And then I think it went through a little hangover after that. And now it's starting to look like there's a bright spot. Once they get this president out of there, this dude Jacob Zuma, he makes Trump look like a fucking scholar.
Oh, wow.
Get out of town.
I'm not kidding.
Jacob Zuma, is he his own publicist too?
Yeah, he's 100%.
See, also, does John Miller represent Jacob Zuma?
Yes, exactly.
Hey, John Miller, represent me. I could use a PR.
I think actually this is the first time I've ever heard this before. Fuck this guy. What the fuck? Fuck this guy.
He's a very good guy. He's a great guy.
There's so many words that we can't say anymore. Like you can't use the word tremendous without looking like an asshole. Now. You can't say good guy.
Right. He's a good guy.
No, you can't say.
Very good guy.
No. Can't say good
knows
guy.
Me well. Knows I don't imitate myself on the phone.
What the fucking fuck is happening to us?
It's a reality show.
Yeah,
it's,
it definitely is.
It's. I mean, unfortunately, this country needs it. It's going to reap what it's sowing. It's giving. It's sowing the grounds with these type of. Adulation, you know, be it, you know, Trump's reality shows, people who, you know, like,
yeah.
People are building careers off of him.
Right.
Off of, you know, Megyn Kelly, if that's her name. I mean, I tried to stay out of the news.
She released a book today.
Exactly. Okay. Of course.
Of course she did.
Of course she did.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And that's only, and I'm not saying that's a bad, I mean, make your money how you make it, but right. in the end, stuff like that is only condoning
people
and
are saying,
supporting what we're doing.
Right. People are saying the word Omarosa again.
Oh, yeah.
Gosh.
Holy cow. Like, do you know what I mean? it's that type of thing where it's like it's this. I mean, it's we're doing it to ourselves.
We totally 100%.
We're doing it to ourselves.
Fuck education.
Doing it to ourselves.
Let's just like celebrate. Fame is the cake, right?
I'm gonna eat it too.
All of the cake we can. The fame cake.
Yeah.
And now look what you did.
Yeah.
Motherfuckers.
Yeah. We got to run around the block a couple times, which is going to be another 8 years before we can work this cake off of us. Maybe.
I don't think he's going to make it to across the finish line. I don't think he's going to win the Bachelor America. I don't think he's going to. I think he's going to trip and fall. I feel like
you're in America, right? Have you been on the internet?
I have. The internet's but the internet doesn't count.
Have you been in the Midwest?
Yes, but I think the Mexicans are going to like. They're going to show up like. They're going to show up like. Remember in Lord of the Rings, when the this shit is over, and then the trees.
Whoa.
The ants.
What is that?
And they're just like, "What the fuck? We got this. We got your back." That's what the Mexicans and the Latin community is going to do. And I think people in general will wake the fuck up.
Well, I hope so.
Fuck facts. Fuck. I mean, we should just start saying that the sun rises in the west.
Well, it does, though.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
You just said
Give
me 5 minutes and it'll say it on Wikipedia
right.
here.
Right.
Let me log in to Wikipedia and I can make that effect.
And if you have enough followers, then people will believe it. Exactly right.
But where he was genius, and I don't want to go off on a tangent, but I already have, where he was genius is he was able to see what the Sarah Palin sort of populist thing that she did.
Oh, yeah.
And when that was over and she retreated, he was like, I'm going to go get that shit.
Yeah.
And he, for 2 years, by himself, was like a gnat flying around Obama's ear about this fucking birth certificate.
Mm-hmm.
And for a certain sector of people, they were like, holy shit.
And
that guy with the gold lamé underwear, I like him. Mm-hmm. He's speaking my shit.
Mm-hmm.
And he played it just long enough for people to remember that he was the only guy who bullied Obama.
Yeah.
And like, I don't even think he believes it. I think
doesn't believe it.
He doesn't believe any of that. He's like, as much as people shit on him, he's an intelligent guy in the sense of it's Game of Thrones. Like, he's playing the Game of Thrones where
total
he's like,
Game of Thrones.
He's seen, like, that's exactly what it is. Sarah Palin, like, moved and he kind of, like, I'm trying to think of an analogy, be it Game of Thrones or Lord of one of those. There's some nerd movie where
there's some
like, the king leaves.
Some Westeros.
And then, like, all of a sudden
sure.
you see this army. And he's like, I can control this army.
Exactly.
And he just swept in there, unbeknownst. I mean, right. He doesn't believe any of the shit he's saying, but he's getting this army of fanatically, like, I don't know, weird
stuff. It's really scary.
Your dad plays the flugelhorn. The flugelhorn. Here's a fun fact about the flugelhorn here, David and Sal, but you might know this already. The flugelhorn is German for winghorn.
Did not know
yeah.
that.
It's well, tell your dad this. Get your dad on the phone because you should know this. No, it's a brass instrument that resembles a trumpet. It's almost like an upside down, like wider trumpet. It has a wider conical bore. Some people falsely consider it to be a member of the saxophone family, the sax horns, which was developed by Adolf Sax, but it was around prior to that, since like 1832, it was it has a bugle design. The valves on the flugelhorn have a bugle design, which was designed by Michael Sorrell in Munich in 1832.
Shit.
So there's some flugelhorn facts.
German
there.
Horn.
I
German
really wing horn. My dad's German more horn. Regal than we
yeah,
knew.
Yeah, he's a regal. He's a regal
so
cat.
Cool.
Sal here has a Vice World of Sports. You have a sports show. You're a huge sports fan.
I'm a sports guy, but I'm
you're a sports guy, or how? No,
did you play a lot of sports, or you just watch a lot of sports? You're a big fan of sports, all the above.
I never played on an organized team, but I was always the guy that you wanted to pick.
Nice, you're a competitor.
I'm a competitor.
Yeah.
I'm a gamer.
Yeah,
I'm gonna go out there and give 110%.
Yeah, right.
Whether it was basketball, football, whatever, and then I moved to California and I started skating, surfing, and snowboarding. Surfing changed my life. In 1988, my parents moved from the East Coast to Carlsbad, California, which was a shock, super culture shock. All of a sudden, you're in this school with people with weird hair and speaking like really super bro talk. And there was 2,500 kids in my school, and one other kid was black, and the rest were white and a little bit of Mexican. And it was like I landed off of a carpet. People were like, "Whoa, what is he? Where is he from?
Right.
Tell us the legends of your land. Did you carry a knife? Are you from New York? You carry a knife." But anyway, a week after being there, this one kid.
Can you imagine? I'm just envisioning, like, I'm going to start treating everybody who's a different color than me like a majestic, like a Disney cartoon, like. Tell us tales from the land you come from.
Yes.
And this is also pre-internet, so, you know, it was really like, it was really a thing. Like, they'd seen black people on MTV. Like, are you a rapper and do you breakdance? Was a real question.
Wow.
Can you do either
of
those?
When were you? Yeah, exactly.
I could breakdance. Yeah. I wasn't a rapper. Yeah. I could make beats, though.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we have a piece of cardboard downstairs, so we'll
problem. My head's been right on out of this place. Uh-huh. But then I started surfing, and that changed my life.
Wow.
And suddenly this thing that I never thought I was going to do, like, changed my whole direction, and then started snowboarding, then got a job at a snowboarding magazine, then skate companies and helping friends start companies. And then we'd all take turns on the mic at contests back then because no one was interested in our sports other than us. So you did an event, everyone did their little piece, and I helped out on the mic and I got a reputation. That led to doing some stuff on MTV when they started to want to do stuff in action sports. They do these things called the MTV Sports and Music Festivals. Then ESPN decided that they wanted to use real people who actually knew about the sports to host the X, to be voices for the X Games.
Right.
And this guy came up to me in a bar in Colorado at a snowboard contest. He's like, "Are you Sal Masekela?" I was like, "Yeah." He said, "I'm Phil Orleans. I'm the executive producer of snowboarding from ESPN." And I stood up in the bar. I'm like, "Who the fuck put this guy up to this?" We're all drunk, and he shows me this embossed card at ESPN. I was like, "Oh, I'm sorry, sir." And that's how it started. And I was at ESPN for 13 years as the host of the X Games.
Wow. When he handed you the card, did you like dissect it like an American Psycho?
Totally.
It's a coral shot card.
Literally, it had like that red woven embossed raised. I was like, "This is real shit."
Wow.
But yeah, it was really fun. I got to work on the NBA for a little bit. I never really fit in at ESPN, like, because I wasn't like a super jock.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes they looked at me as like, "Oh, well, he's just the skateboarding guy."
Yeah.
But I was always a sports fan in general. And when I left ESPN in 2013, 2012, I'd always wanted to do more like storytelling stuff, like figure out sports and culture as opposed to. I was never like into box scores per se.
Right.
And then I met Shane Smith at a Google conference. I mediated a panel between him and the guy who started BuzzFeed, and we all hit it off really well. And then I ran into him again at another YouTube thing in New York, and he was like, "I think maybe you should come and work for me. I like your look on life." I was like, and I've been a fan of Vice going back to the magazine, you know, late 90s, early 2000s. And I was like, "I don't want to work for you, but I'll work with you."
Nice.
And he's like, "Oh, I don't think anyone would talk to him like that." And that's how we started.
Did you come up with the idea of the show? Or was it something that it was perfect?
We came up with it together. I started off doing stuff for HBO.
Uh-huh.
And then in the midst of this episode I was doing for the HBO show in Cuba, we had been talking about how we wanted to do a sports show. That became an episode for the sports show, which actually is tonight, Cuban episode.
Las Grandes Ligas?
Yeah.
Which is, I believe, Spanish for Major League Baseball, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I
nice work.
I had to Google translate it.
But it's been the most incredible, fun 18 months ever. Because now, instead of like being in a studio talking about things, I'm actually out in places like Ghana and Kenya. And I just got back from Australia investigating Australian rules football, this crazy rivalry between the two oldest teams that hate each other.
Yeah, what'd you learn over there?
I learned that, Aussie rules football has never left basically the Victoria area, the Melbourne area. They have 10 teams in one city.
Holy
shit. There's nothing more Australian than Aussie rules football. And then it doesn't really affect the rest of the country. It's played on a field so gigantic that it wouldn't work anywhere else in the world. And there's 36 players on the field at any given time. It's 18 on 18. You got to be able to run. You need to be able to run about 10 miles a game. You got to be able to kick.
Right.
Tackle.
And it's not rugby.
It's not rugby at all. If you say it's fucking rugby to them, they'll be like, "Fuck, it's not fucking
listen
rugby,
here,
mate.
Right?
Listen here, mate.
Yeah,
it's not rugby. Okay?
That's not rugby. Yeah. This is rugby.
Say AFL. That's Australian. It's not rugby.
Right.
It's Australian rules football.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And it's not rugby in any way, shape, or form. And the athleticism was crazy. Mm. I'd just never seen anything like it. But after being with the teams behind the scenes for practice and then going to three games, it finally kind of clicked. But during the Australian Depression, like, that was the only thing that people had was their AFL clubs. So there, they don't even call them fans. Mm. There's this English word called barracker, where you barrack for your club or supporter or barracker. But they don't even use the word fan. It's not in their lexicon, which was really cool.
Wow.
And people are like diehards. The game, the earliest barrackers and supporters weren't the men, but they were the women. Women went to the games and they adopted sort of who their players were, and those were their boys when their kids were off at war. The whole thing was it was really fascinating. So that's the kind of level that we try to take to the show.
Wow.
Because if you're not a sports fan, it doesn't matter. Sports just happen to sort of be the through line for culture stories and human stories that you normally wouldn't know about, but might find interesting.
How much time did you get to tell each story?
I'm usually in a place about 10 days.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you really absorb a lot.
You're all the way in.
Wow.
The game's origins for Australian football, officially known as Australian football, footy, or Aussie rules, the game's origins can be traced to football matches played in Melbourne in 1858.
And before that, probably a version of an Aboriginal game that they were like, "Oh, we'll take that."
The Australian football has the highest spectator attendance of all sports in Australia. That's wild.
Well, if you have that many teams in one city, yeah, absolutely.
10 teams.
That's crazy. I can imagine.
Yeah, in one city. And then they only recently have expanded to other cities in maybe the last 20 years.
Do they all share a stadium?
A bunch of them. Like, I think there's six or seven that play at this one.
Right.
At the Melbourne, I think it's the Grand Cricket Club. It's massive. You're in there and you're like, this is what the Roman Coliseum felt like. And that's the energy in the games.
Wow.
The fans are like nothing.
Just packed? Amazing. Just packed?
Packed.
Whoa.
Yeah.
The field is like a... It's like a giant oval. The field and the ball are a giant oval. And the field resembles like if you took a tennis ball and you squished it.
Yeah.
Oh, whoa.
And it's giant. You could fit 2.5 American football fields on it.
Get out of town.
Yeah. It's
that's so
psychotic.
Wow. That's bananas.
I had no idea.
Listen.
That's so bananas. Like, soccer fields are huge. This yeah. is like...
When shit is happening on one side of the field, they're actually people who run out in these pink outfits. For some reason, I don't know why it's pink. I literally thought there was like some cancer awareness, but like, no, that's just a normal color. They run out, the trainers run out, and they're giving people water in the middle of the game and then wow. running back before the ball comes to the other side.
Wow.
It was super
18
tripping.
People per side? 16 people.
18 a side.
18. Wow. That's a big-ass field.
With four people being allowed to rotate
right.
in for subs like hockey style.
Right.
It's crazy.
Did you ever try to play?
I learned how to kick
yeah.
and run around with it. You can't run more than 15 meters without oh. bouncing the ball.
Oh.
So these guys can run at full speed and then bounce the ball and throw it out ahead of themselves so it bounces back to them.
And this is an oval shaped ball kind of?
I yeah.
Kind of like a
rugby
football,
ball, but like a little bigger. Bit different shape.
Wow.
And it's all smooth. There's no grip on it.
Right. Right. What an interesting sport.
It's incredible.
Oh
boy.
So for senior football, the playing field is an oval. It's typically between 135 to 185 meters long, goal to goal. Now, for those of you pretty much just the United States who don't know what meters are, that equals 606 feet.
Whoa.
That's so long.
Yeah.
That's just the length?
That's just the length. Length.
Holy shit.
It's insane.
And it's 110 to 155 meters wide.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, you have to be in the best shape ever to play that sport.
Oh,
these dudes are Adonises.
Wow.
Like, I walk in the locker room, I was like, oh, I should wear more clothes when I come. So you can't see how pathetic. I mean, they're super creatures.
Wow.
They're like avatars. That's avatars, basically.
Right. Wow.
Very unique set of skills.
Wasn't there an Aussie? I feel like there was an Aussie.
A bunch of Liam Neeson's running around.
Basically a bunch of young
Liam Neeson's playing Aussie football.
I feel like there was an Aussie that played in the NFL just
they come over,
last season.
Yeah, they play for 10 years there, make lots of money, and then they come here and they just come run out and kick field goals.
That's crazy.
And punt.
Wow, that's crazy.
And laugh. That they're wearing pads and helmets.
I think there was
by the way, all this shit happens without pads. And they can tackle each other from 360 degree angle.
Yeah.
It's totally legal.
Yeah.
Blindside life. Get yours.
Well, when you're an Adonis, you don't feel it anyways.
Like, yeah. I mean, exactly.
Here's the deal. When you're running around on a field that big, you have no pain tolerance.
No, none at all.
Or you have a high pain tolerance. Yeah, so if you can, I mean, you're so like exhausted. You could take a bullet and you'd be like, oh, I got to run some more.
They punch each other when they're down. They're so funny. I asked them, I said, well, how do you sort of like get morale going if things are going bad? Mm-hmm. You got to harden up, Mac. Harden up.
Right.
Harden up. Harden up.
Right.
That's the saying.
Right. Harden up, mate.
Don't say man up.
No.
No. Harden up.
Harden up. That's it. Wow. Interesting sport.
I got to imagine half of these players have like screws loose as it is. Do you know what I mean? Like they can't, like there's got to be, to be able to, I mean, it's one, like, for one thing, like, I feel
nicest
like...
Nicest guys, though.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
Compared to rugby players who look like they eat rocks for a living, these guys were
very mellow. See, I didn't realize, that's one thing I learned today, is that there's two different types of football. There's rugby, I mean, rugby's not even football, but Australia's got... And then they do soccer, too, right?
There's three rugbies. There's rugby, rugby league, rugby union, and then Aussie rules football.
And then, but... They also play soccer.
Type of rugby?
No, but it's not type of football. Oh. So
Australia's also got soccer, though, right?
And they have soccer, but they laugh at it culturally. Like, oh, okay, well,
all right.
I guess if you just want to kick
bananas.
The ball around, right? Go right on ahead.
Here's the thing. So I looked up. So you got the episode about Cuba
tonight,
And Cuba is the largest island in the Caribbean. I didn't know that. It's the largest island in the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. I'm the second most populous after the island Hispaniola, which is the home of, and I didn't know this either, the Dominican Republic and Haiti share an island.
Yeah.
And that's Hispaniola.
Yeah, I went there.
Which is the second, Hispaniola actually is the, I got it pulled up here, as far as islands go, Hispaniola is the 11th largest, most populous island.
The irony of that is that Cubans that defect to make it to be able to play baseball in the States, they take a boat to Haiti, and then they cross into the Dominican Republic, and 6 months there, give up their citizenship, gain residency in the Dominican, which makes them able to qualify to be entered into the draft.
Oh, wow.
Oh.
That's how they get around.
So the major league draft?
Yeah, that's how they get around the embargo. And they're still defecting today, because even though we have normalized relations, so to speak, or we're beginning this dialogue, all that shit hasn't changed. So, like, two of the highest prospects just defected from Cuba maybe 3 months ago.
Huh. That's so weird.
It's a trip. So everyone's like, oh, it's all cool. We're everything. Yeah. There's Airbnbs in Cuba. Yeah.
They're still secretly trying to leave.
Things are still the same.
Not the
greatest. The people were amazing. The passion of the game was insane. They got bands in the stands at the baseball games.
Really?
Fucking managers come out and just...
I mean, I would probably go to sport games if there was like...
In Cuba?
Crazy stuff.
It's an event.
And like even here, like I don't watch sports. I'm not a sports fan. It's boring to me. It doesn't affect my daily life. The outcome of the games don't matter to me.
Right.
But if there was more of like a thing going on, I probably would like...
Yeah.
I would be way more involved.
I went to a few soccer games in Germany and like they set fires in the stands. Like they'll bring like big barrels of like trash and shit and there's a fire all of a sudden. And you're like, whoa, and they're all dancing around the fire in the stands. It's like, what is going on here?
I want to pretend I'm a bum in the stands of a sporting event.
Yeah, in Cuba, it's crazy. Trumpets, horns, people.
Flugelhorns?
Maybe flugelhorns. Yeah. But it was pretty radical.
Wow.
And because of the way the government's organized, the government manages baseball all the way down to like the peewee level. So they're looking at prospects, you know, in 5, 6, 7 year olds, and then they see okay, that kid's got a certain set of skills, and you'll put him amongst these kids, etc. And they breed them so that by the time their kids are like, by the time a Cuban kid is like 17, 18, 16, 17, he's at the same level as a major leaguer. Here, like they have like a bunch of 16, 17 year olds who could be in the draft tomorrow and making millions of dollars.
They're groomed to be professional athletes at 7 years old by 100%. The government.
Yeah.
Wow. That's really interesting.
Yeah, they run the game.
Huh. Wow.
Trippy. The things you learn when you go on the road.
Yeah.
Especially in other countries like that.
That's nuts.
It's so interesting how.
Well, here it's entertainment, right?
Yeah. Right.
Sports for us, for the most part, is entertainment.
Pure entertainment. It's
you know, your mom's got moms who's driving the minivan around, gymnastics, hockey. Which one do you want to do? Which one feels good?
Right. Yeah.
You know?
There's not the dedication to become that. And like
it's not defining you. It's not life. It's not going to affect your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's what I think the thing that's been most interesting about going to these other places, going to Ghana and like finding out about boxing in a little fishing village in Accra, or we went to Kenya to find out why the Kingali people like win 87% of all marathons in the world.
Yeah.
And you're like, "Oh, you live on a farm."
Right.
I mean,
and you win a local race and it's going to change your life.
Right. Is there any joy that these people have, like being raised just to be good at a sport? Like once these people are older, do they still, because it is a sport, it is a game. Like I think a lot of athletes here, they really love what it is that they do, but like being groomed at such a young age to be this thing, are you finding some of these athletes have joy still, or?
I found that people were still wildly passionate about it.
Still.
I mean, even like the legends 20, 30 years later, they're celebrated locally as people who made a difference in how the world views their little place that they come from. And that gives them an immense sense of pride in who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And even in Cuba, where you would think that they'd be bitter at these players that have left, they're so proud that, you know, 30% of Major League Baseball is inhabited by Cuban and Dominican players. So, yes, that's the mark we're making in the biggest country and the biggest place of the game in the world.
Right, right.
I guess it's also an interesting thing, too. Like, if you're in those types of, you know, third world or small, you know, countries of that sort, if that's – I mean, they don't have, like, you know – I mean, they don't have meaning. They're not as prominent as far as I know. I've never been to them. But, like, here, at least in America, in the United States, and even in, you know, Canada and in Europe and all that, there's TV, there's, like, colleges, there's other avenues to really succeed and become somebody, in quotations, whereas, like, in a lot of these countries, I imagine, it's like you have a few options to really become leave your mark and make a decent, you know, income or be celebrated.
They have a saying in Bukom, in this place in Ghana. It's a fishing village, 50,000 people. That's where all these fighters come from. And their saying is, you either fish or you fight.
Wow.
You're walking through the streets in Bukom, yeah. and there's like six-year-olds, and they're slapboxing in the street.
Wow.
Seven, eight, shadowboxing in the street. Wow. Having real fights, right. and the adults don't break them up. Unless
they're training.
Unless, like, another kid jumps in, and right. then that's considered unfair.
Right.
But, like, fighting is just... And it's like in 300. Wow. Remember in the beginning of 300 when that little right. kid is getting the shit kicked out of him and he goes and kills the whatever the beast is?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I felt like there. I was like, oh.
Wow.
And those people that inhabit that particular tribe, they're called the Ga people, and they've traditionally have been the fighters in Ghana for, like, warriors for 2,000 years. So a little bit of DNA, a little bit of hunger, and fight
yeah.
and conditioning
right.
and forget about it.
Right.
Wow. That's wild. To go a little bit 180 here, we were talking about our original, our real names, our full names.
Yeah.
David, what's your full name?
David Sullivan.
You don't have a middle name?
Wade.
Come on.
Yeah, I was named after a pool player. My dad enjoyed pool. I mean, it's boring. I'm from East Texas. It's
David Wade Sullivan.
That's it.
Yeah. Wade, what a Texas name, too.
Oh, so Texan. So
I know
Texan.
A Texan named Wade, I think.
Do you? Good guy.
Good guy. Or an Australian.
Is he a billiard player?
Yeah. Yeah. Does he play billiards? I was worried because when I first joined SAG, there were like 9 David Sullivans. And I was like, oh no, I'm going to have to go by Wade. That's going to be awful. But for some reason, nobody registered through the union. So I got to keep my name, David Sullivan.
David Wade.
Yeah, David Wade. I don't tell, well, now everybody
Downtown
knows,
Wade. We do game nights every Friday night. And he's somehow adopted the nickname Downtown David.
No idea.
So I'm gonna try and.
Sounds threatening.
The next month,
we don't need
my
to introduce Wade.
Is trying to introduce Wade.
Nah, we don't need to introduce that.
Sounds threatening.
Here's the deal. My middle name is John. Your middle name is Mabena.
Mabena.
Hugh Grant, you know, the actor Hugh Grant.
Sure.
Rom-com
champion of the universe. He has 2 middle names.
Okay.
First one is John.
Sure.
Ready for the second one? Wade, you're...
No?
You're happy.
No? Yeah.
Be happy you got Wade.
Okay. Hugh John.
Mungo.
Hugh John Mungo.
Hugh John Mungo Grant.
Mungo with a U?
Mungo. M-U-N-G-O.
Mungo.
Yeah.
Wow.
He must have
given his mother a real... painful fit of labor.
Mungo, yeah.
Does your middle name mean something?
Mabena?
Yeah.
What does Mabena mean?
I asked because I wish my name meant something, but it was
I can't think of it right this very second. Salema is like a harvester or planter.
Uh-huh.
But...
And your last name?
Does Masakela.
It mean something? Yeah, yeah. Does it mean something?
I'm sure it does in a few different languages.
Right, right.
But Salema is the one that I do know.
Yeah. I was talking with this
my
Danish.
Father right now would be so. What do you mean you went on that show and you didn't know what your name means?
Well, now everybody else is going to look it up,
yeah.
and you're going to have more people even that much more curious.
And you're no longer my son.
And as he's looking it up, there it is, got it. That's great. Who are you looking up now?
I'm looking it up to see if I can find out where it comes from. No luck. I look up your last name and your dad's name pops up. So that's it.
Listen, if you Google Masakela, you got to go like 60 pages in to get to me. That's the incredible life that my father's
So had. This is interesting because this is – I'm sure I've known this years ago. Then it just slipped my mind or whatever. But it's interesting how when you listen to things start to fall like into play. And what I mean is – so I was listening to – another podcast, Mark Maron's podcast, and he had Cindy Crawford on because she had a book coming out. And she was talking about this company called Elite Model Management. And then so she was talking a lot about that. Like Elite Model Management was the company that they founded. They developed the Elite Model look. They pretty much created the idea of supermodels, okay? And it was founded by a gentleman by the name of John Casablancas. He started Elite Model Management in 1972 in Paris, France. They developed and launched models such as Cindy Crawford, Stephanie Seymour, Tyra Banks, Naomi Campbell, Cara Delevingne, a lot of people.
Everyone in the George Michael video.
Pretty much. His son.
Julian.
Julian Casablancas.
Yes.
From The Strokes, from the band The Strokes.
Yes.
And I'm like, as it's all going through, like, I'm looking up things like that. It's all like, how did I not know that? Or maybe I did back in the 2000s. But it's interesting that I had this fact set aside for a while, and then it kind of worked out perfectly since your dad's a musician.
Yeah.
And it's always interesting to see who, like, other people's fathers are that you don't even know are. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I always think that Julian Casablancas had a really rough time growing up. Like, his idea of what girls were.
Yeah. Like, what is that? I mean, what does that do to a young kid?
Yeah,
unless it just makes you even more like zero fucks given when it comes to approaching girls. You know what I mean? Like,
right. Exactly. It probably gave him some super, super, super powers.
Yeah.
But it's hard when it's a different path. It's interesting when you have famous parents.
Yeah.
Sure.
You know, if, like, for me, I ran from music. I played, I sang growing up. I was, you know, in the choir. I was a theater kid. And then I just reached a certain point where I was like, this is stupid to even try and think about. Because anytime if someone says, an adult says, here's your last name, they're like, oh, show me the stuff that your father has given you. And so surfing and snowboarding skateboarding.
Well, he's given me some fugal horns. I got a couple trumpets.
Pick up some brass and blow for me, child. And I got into entertainment by accident.
Yeah.
You know, it was only because of having a passion for those sports that I ended up on TV, and then things came full circle. And I now actually make music on the side.
Yeah.
But I would never have touched it. Mm-hmm. Never thought I'd do anything that would end up.
All because you moved to Carlsbad and took up surfing. Mm-hmm.
How crazy is that?
Mm-hmm. Isn't that interesting how, like, I've always had, it's like, I use the Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade analogy of the leap of faith. He's walking out after the penitent man shall pass and all that, and then he comes to that gap.
Mm-hmm.
And he just, it's like the invisible bridge, and he just takes faith and continues walking,
right.
And then he turns around, and then you can see the bridge that he crossed over.
Yeah.
And I look at that as like life, where it's like you don't see the bricks that are being laid in front of you on where you're going until you get there, and then you turn around and you see where your actual destination
That's
is
cool.
and how you got there. You know, like, had you not moved to Carlsbad, you may have not gotten into, like, the surfer sports.
Never.
And then you wouldn't. In theory, you probably wouldn't be here right now hosting these sports shows and doing everything that you love, because you would have never gotten involved into surfing. So it's always
so
interesting to see how
weird.
That's cool.
You're not in charge of the how.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah.
Really wild.
Should pay you for that therapy we just went through.
Yeah. So Vice started off. Here's another fun fact. One thing I like about this show is I love trying to figure out how I can segue facts that I've had for a while and to bring it into certain shows.
Mm-hmm.
So Vice started off as a magazine.
Yes.
Which dealt – obviously magazines deal with fonts and headlines and things like that. One of my favorite fonts is Impact, which is also a popular – like most memes you see use the Impact font. The Impact font is a realist sans serif typeface designed by Geoffrey Lee in 1965. And it was released by Stephenson Blake Foundry in Sheffield, and it started being included in Microsoft Windows since 98. But Impact font, I am always curious, because fonts, like with the internet and Photoshops and all that, you have like a bajillion fonts in your phones and in these apps and all of that, and a lot of them are actually like they were carried over from like old typeface where people had to etch them into like metal and put them into newspaper type prints and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And
they were not graphically designed on a,
do you
a
mean?
Computer.
Like that stuff is peculiar and interesting to me too, is it's like people, the things that had to be done prior to like technology and how much it still carries over.
Right.
And there's something psychological about fonts.
Oh, absolutely.
Like it elicits a feeling in how you connect to what's being said in those words because of whether or not the font is attractive to you.
Absolutely.
That's what kind of creatures are
we? It's so unconscious. Like, it's so dealing with the subconscious and the unconscious. Like, why is that font making me feel a certain way?
Yeah.
Why is that font sexy?
Yeah, yeah,
why is that font aggressive?
Yeah, right. Right.
You should have a font guy on here.
Times New Roman.
So straight. Strictly missionary.
Ready? Serif typeface commissioned by the British newspaper The Times in 1931.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Very English.
So it was commissioned by the British newspaper. I'm just like at some point, did they give notes on these fonts?
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, did they say a little more serif?
Yeah. Right.
We're almost there.
I wonder what font the typewriters are print in. Like they're all kind of shaped, you know, the letters are shaped the same way. I wonder if that what specific font that is.
Well, and fun fact about the QWERTY keyboard.
Yeah.
The reason it's the QWERTY keyboard is because when it was typewriters, they separated the letters to where the most common letters when used two like simultaneously they would jam up, so they separated them so that you could use different fingers, so that way the hammers of the typeface
didn't smash, because then you'd have to go and remember
that
so that's where like
pull them apart
that's where like our computer keyboards and even like the keyboards on your phone and all that derive from.
How lucky are we that we got to be in all that shit? Like, we learned and got our fingers smashed, like, learning how to type on a typewriter. Yeah. A physical fucking typewriter.
Yeah.
Then a word processor. Oh, word processor. Yeah. This thing is electric.
Yeah.
And all these things that we've gotten to...
Yeah.
We're
in our
lucky.
Generation.
Yeah, for
our
sure. new millennial bitches. You didn't get to live the shit that we did.
Right.
Sorry, millennials, don't hate me. Well, but we are luckier.
To go on further, my grandfather, who's like 88 years old, he's seen the invention of the microwave. And everything we mentioned.
Yeah.
So it's like, who's That's it's cool. It's an interesting thing because it's like, I have two little nephews. I have three nephews. One, when I say nephews, I talk about the ones that can do stuff for me, like that I have fun hanging out with. My 8-year-old and my 6-year-old nephew are, I can hang out with my 1-year-old nephew is just a thing to me. And then I have a, like, a,
of no use. He has
half,
no use.
I have a 1.5-year-old niece that's kind of, she's cute, but it's like, come on.
Does nothing.
But like, I'm jealous of those kids too, because they'll, in theory, if they don't get hit by a car or accidentally consume a peanut because they're allergic to peanuts, they could live, in theory, to be like 500 years old.
Right.
Like the way technology and 3D printing with arteries and hearts and science is going.
I can't wait for
Like, we are going to, I feel like we're going to miss that. But they're
no,
also.
No. We're going to get there.
We're not going to be 500. They might get to be like older.
We'll get to like one.
We'll get to 100, I think.
15, maybe.
I hope so. And I'm so excited for that, because you just look at your iPhones and what we've seen in the last, you know, 40 years. And I'm not 40. I'm 34. You're 44. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to point that out for the audience. I'm the youngest one in this room, probably.
Yes, you are.
But, like, it's the advancement. That's one thing that, like I get excited about. And, like, learning, like, even, like, your show is – I'm not huge into sports, but I love learning about, like, cultures and technology. Mm-hmm. And just – I love learning about things. Mm-hmm. And I'm so excited about – the future and like everything that we've gotten to see. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's such a.
I feel bad that I missed out on coding.
Yeah. I wish I would.
And I can't wait till maybe there's some cool, like, adult, very hipster coding classes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That you go to meet girls.
Do you know how to type regularly? Did you learn how to type?
Yeah.
Did you? Or do you type with two fingers? Or
I type.
Yeah.
I mean, I can type.
Yeah.
Half the time I'm using, like, I have my own typing system, but I know about the home row keys.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
You favor, but you know where to set up.
Uh-huh. A lot of people don't know how to do that.
Yeah. They don't have typing classes.
What? You don't have time?
I only use my thumbs because that's what I do with my phone.
Or I just hit the little microphone button and I speak into my phone.
I mean, I do that.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah. But I mean, like, I have a 10-year-old and I'm like, I'm going to teach you how to type. And he's like, no, why? I don't, Dad, I never type. And I'm like, what? You go, huh? Well, how do you not type? Everything is just like either with his thumbs.
I remember taking handwriting cursive classes in like grade school.
Sure. I still have very nice handwriting that I sometimes send people notes. did you get a copy of that? Can you read it to me? Because I don't know what this is, this cuneiform that you sent me on the parchment.
maybe I can take a picture with my phone and it'll translate it for me.
Sending microfiche to get things. I remember going to the libraries to look at, like, microfiche.
Sure, of course.
Look it up.
Yeah.
Meant.
Right.
It's going to be a while.
It's going
to
take a minute.
Go to a place.
Encyclopedia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Find the volume. And my parents never had, like, the R through S. And so it was like everything was R through S. Like, where's the R through S encyclopedia?
My homework's due tomorrow.
Yeah. The one that was missing. I think they got it on sale or
there
something.
There was no, you know. That's the other thing. You couldn't GTS. You couldn't Google that shit. You had, like, if I asked a question in my house and I didn't know the answer, my mother just went,
look it up.
Look it up.
Sure.
Yeah. And I'm so grateful for that.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
So grateful for that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But now, what did that do to me? Google that shit.
Yeah.
You're a lot smarter than you probably give yourself credit for because of that.
It probably helps in my overall decision making.
Yeah, probably so.
But there's something to be said in the, like, the nerd sense of, like, computer sense, where there's, like, RAM and ROM, where there's like random access memory and whatever the ROM mm-hmm. stands for, mm-hmm. operating memory. I don't know that. I would have known that in high school,
right.
But there's also something to be said about looking things up and retaining it.
Sure.
And then you just Google something flash,
right.
Yeah.
And you know it for a couple minutes, and yeah. then 3 days
it
later,
again.
It's done.
Mm. Yeah.
You don't know it.
And usually when you
were
look,
bred for retention.
Usually yeah. when you look something up, you're reading everything about it. You're not just reading like the one line
yeah.
definition.
Who was
or
the
what
second
yeah.
lead in Mission Impossible
yeah.
2?
Yeah. You're reading, you know, all about it. So you actually do learn about it.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Wild stuff. Sal, thank you so much. So now it's your show. Tell everybody when and where and how, and tell us everything you can that you want the audience to know about the Vice World of Sports, and where on social media they can find you and all that type of stuff.
Watch Vice World of Sports on Viceland.com if you don't have the cable. And if you do have the cable, on the Viceland channel, we are at Wednesdays at 11 p.m. It's a really, really great show. You could watch it with your girlfriend. Or your boyfriend,
mm-hmm.
whatever side of the fence that you're on. And on social media, it's Sal Masekela on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, and Salakazam on the Snapchat, which is basically Alakazam is my name. Masekela backwards is Alakazam, and then you put an S on the front of it, and it's Salakazam.
Wow.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Because
I just feel like a spell was cast.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's pretty much how it is.
Are you
that's
a genie? Cool.
Kind
did
of.
You ever get that asked? Did
yeah.
people ever say that? Say
yeah,
that
definitely. When my band is called Alakazam.
Alakazam.
And so people are always like, is that magic? And I'm like, no, just look at it backwards. And they're like, oh my God, it's Masekela. I'm like, yeah, it is.
My real last name is Abracadabra backwards.
which is...
I don't know. I didn't think that far ahead.
Shit.
Really does Chris Hardwick listen to the show?
He does on occasion.
Hey, Chris.
Yeah.
He drove past me in a wildly expensive car the other day, and I was like, I think he made it.
I think so.
I think he made it. I love that dude. And he was always so cool. So
yeah, he's a nice dude, real dude. He's much like yourself, where you do what you like and success will find you.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like you do what you love
yeah.
and what you enjoy, and you work hard at it
yeah.
and you make yourself happy. And the success will come.
Yeah, he's a guy who literally keeps me motivated. Every time
yeah.
I see him succeed, I'm like, yeah, it wasn't easy for you.
No way. Yeah.
But he stuck to what he knows.
Yeah.
So thank you guys for having
absolutely.
Me.
Thank
yeah.
you for doing
no,
this.
Thank you.
And thanks
yeah.
for ruining Venice.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, my pleasure.
Appreciate
my pleasure.
It.
My
thank
pleasure.
You.
Dave,
I can't go to Jelena anymore.
Yeah,
see
I know.
You guys.
I know.
Dave, where can
uh-huh.
everybody find you? And do you have any news about Flaked?
I can't announce anything.
No, fair enough.
Of course not. My street's going to be closed, though, for sure.
If your streets are closed, it's not us. David Sullivan on Twitter, David Sullivan on Instagram, David Sullivan 9, I think, on Snapchat. I don't know. And I think that's it.
Give me a walk on and maybe I'll forget about it.
Yeah, come on, you should. I think we actually did a movie together. We just weren't on the same days in Utah.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Ben Banks.
Ben Banks.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hold on,
when I was
on.
Doing my research.
No way.
What's the name of this movie?
I think it changed the name from like Ben Banks to like Beauty and the Beast or something.
If you just look up Ben Banks.
Yeah.
What did you play?
I was the motorhome salesman.
Oh, shit.
Who was, yeah.
Yeah, those
yeah.
weren't my
uh-huh,
days.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Ah!
So I missed. I showed up like on the last week, and he had already gone, but I heard all the stories.
Oh, get out of town. David Sullivan as Glenn Ambers.
That's him.
Sal Masekela yep. as Hank Ashby.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
I look like
hell.
A real Hank
yeah,
Ashby.
Yeah, yeah. Did you see a cut of the movie?
I did.
I never got.
It wasn't horrible.
No? Oh, no. That's good. That's
yeah.
good. That's good.
It wasn't horrible.
I'll
I think it opened
it.
On like one screen.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Ben Banks is a 2012 independent American comedy
man.
Drama.
Oh, shit.
And the directorial debut of Bryce Clark.
Yeah. yeah.
The film stars Misha
sweet
Barton,
guy.
Melora Hardinan,
mm-hmm.
and Catherine Town.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Plot. I'm going to just read through this plot because I have no. This
oh,
is going to be
boy.
A treat for all of us.
Oh, man.
Bonus time.
Bonus time, guys. You guys are in for a treat.
That's so cool.
I know.
This is amazing.
Yeah,
this
it's
is
great.
Awesome.
It's great.
Ben Banks, the 28-year-old journalism student, is a stoner who constantly avoids responsibility and happens to be on the 12-year plan at the local 2-year community college.
Mm-hmm.
Ben Banks, the movie, asks, what would it take to awaken ambition in this guy? The answer, a local conspiracy, a dead body,
yeah.
and a gorgeous woman
yeah.
with a troubled past.
That's it. That's it.
Ben Banks.
I think the guy who actually played Ben Banks was a kid named Ben Banks.
He had never
acted before.
Nope.
And he was the lead in the movie. So I don't know.
He tried. And I was impressed with him.
Yeah.
He was amongst us, and he did pretty good.
Yeah, he did.
Him playing a person like named Ben Banks is very similar to like Joey playing what's his name, Matt LeBlanc playing all Joeys,
sure,
or like who's the boss? Tony.
Tony. Yeah. He always plays Tony.
Tony always plays Tony. He played Tony in Who's the Boss. He played Tony in this other show. Then he played Tony on Taxi.
Yeah.
It's like people who just only can play their first name.
That's funny.
No, I'm never going to have to worry about playing Salemo.
No, but you're only going to play Hanks.
Hanks, yeah. Hank Ashby for life.
Well, Hank, thank you for doing the show.
That's great.
Couldn't have ended it any better.
Yeah, of course.
That's great. I love ends like this. Like the other day, we had Nick Reiner on, Rob Reiner's kid, promoting his movie.
Oh, my gosh. And that was so hilarious.
It was like he sat quiet most, and his co-writer did most of the talking. And then we get to the end of the show, and we start talking about other movies his dad did. And all of a sudden, he just starts making fun of his dad's movies.
He starts roasting.
He was roasting his dad's movies.
Yeah, the movie was a piece of shit.
We were just going down, and then he's like, fuck it, this was all right.
Yeah.
He was just roasting
I don't know what he was thinking on this movie. This movie was terrible.
It was so funny.
Oh, it was so good.
So I love the podcast episodes that are like fun, normal episodes, and then it's like a fun treat. Yeah. It's like some magic random.
We just treated everybody, Sal.
Well done.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome.
Well, thank you guys for listening to the show. Thank you guys for doing the show. Thank you guys. Watch Vice World of Sports. Everybody do that. I watched a couple episodes and I really enjoyed them. Really fun, informative things. Do that. Continue to give us good reviews on iTunes and like us on Facebook. Today we learned with Razzle and Dan. You can follow me on Twitter at my name is Razzle too. Follow me on Instagram at my name is Razzle. Follow Dan at OsteoFerocious. Send us an email at todaywelearnpodcast@gmail.com. Like us on Facebook, TWL Podcast. There's a lot. You guys know them before. Just listen to other episodes. And as always, give Hank Ashby a round of applause.
Hank.
Alakazam. Thank you, guys, everybody.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.